Okay, we're going to start in a minute on Vav Amud Aleph, the Gemara, but let's maybe just recap the Mishnahs. We haven't seen it since Thursday. I'll just speak it outside. The Mishnah's discussing why the Torah mentions two and three witnesses. By two and three witnesses, you will execute a person. If two witnesses is enough, wouldn't three be enough? Certainly you don't need to be told three. That three is obvious. Why does Hefer Torah have to tell us that? So the first opinion says we're trying to compare two to three. Just like three people can disqualify two witnesses and make them Edim Zomim, so can two make three Zomim and even 100 make Edim Zomim. That was the first teaching. Second teaching of Reb Shimon was that just like when there's two, neither one is killed as a Zomim unless both of them are Zomimim. So too, if there's three, you can't kill any of them unless all three are Zomimim, and even if 100 are Zomimim. That was Reb Shimon. Rabbi Akiva says, well, the Pasuk is not only coming to be lenient, but it's also coming to be strict, and to say that when you have two false, or you have three witnesses, and even if all three are false, one guy could say, well, listen, you didn't need me to kill the guy anyway, so why should I get killed if I'm a false witness? You already had two. So we kill them all. Doesn't matter how many you have, how many you needed. That is makes them false witnesses, and they all get killed. Then the final teaching that was taught over there is if you have two witnesses, you find one to be a relative or a disqualified witness, we throw out the entire testimony. So too, if there are three witnesses and you find one to be a relative or a disqualified witness, we throw them all out. Mm-hmm. Even if 100 come at the same time, we throw them all out. Yeah. Now, that was the Rabbi Akiva over there. Then we brought Rabbi Yossi, who's going to argue on two points. The first point, he qualifies. He says, when do we see, if you find one of the witnesses, a relative or disqualified, it knocks it all out? That's only in capital cases. But in monetary cases, we keep the testimony with the rest. So that's the first argument, where Rabbi Yossi says, only by capital cases we throw them out. While the first opinion says, even by monetary cases, we throw them out. And the second thing let's back that up. Rabbi Yossi said only by capital cases, and Rebbe argued on him and said it doesn't matter, capital cases and monetary cases, throw them out. So Machlokas Rebbe and Rabbi Yossi. And then he says, and when do we say it even in the cases in capital cases, if they warned the fellow? Remember, the witnesses were all together warning the fellow. But if they weren't warning the fellow, so what do you want to do? If two brothers would happen to see something, just because they're watching it, do they disqualify each other? So they had to be coming there as witnesses, and how do we know they come as witnesses? By warning them. So to sum up that last point, it seems that Rabbi Yossi and Rebbe are arguing in two points. One is it only in capital cases do we say if you find one of them to be a relative or disqualified that we knock them out, or we also do it in monetary cases? That's the Machlokas Rabbi Yossi and Rebbe in one case. And the second is, if the witnesses only, they have to warn the guy first, or they intended to be witnesses, that's when they combine. And if therefore one of them is a relative or disqualified, it knocks it all out. Or no, even if they didn't have in mind, they still can knock it out merely by the fact of watching. It will appear by Rebbe adding that second point too, that he's arguing on Rabbi Yossi as well. So it seems there's two machlokasim between the two of them. Do we say that the false witness or the relative knocks out only in capital cases but not in monetary cases, or even in both? And if they do knock out in a capital case, do they have to have been there watching it and warning or showing that they wanted to witness this? Or no, even if they were watching it, it knocks out. So those are the two machlokasim. So that is the recap. Now we're going to get into the Gemara on Vav Amud Aleph. Amar Rava. So now Rava is going to qualify that Mishnah's ruling that we say that 100 witnesses are treated the same as two. Amar Rava, v'hu sheheidu kulam b'toch chedei dibur. How are you going to measure them that they're coming together in the court? We're talking about in the court now. So right away, he says, it's only true if they all testified within this time frame called toch kedei dibur, literally within the time of speaking, right? So we'll see exactly what that is in a minute. But he's saying it has to be made within a very short time, one to the other. So it's continued. It's considered like one, just like when one person speaking, and you're saying something, and then right away, even just after a brief pause, he continues to speak. It's like one statement. So to witnesses, they have to testify one right after the other within that small time frame, which we'll see in a minute what that is. So it comes out that, so you look at that last footnote over there, the first group can be punished for hazama even without the second set being proven zomim and vice versa if more time has passed. In other words, you have two witnesses testifying about this. An hour passes, not even an hour, really 1 minute passes. And a second group testifies, and one group is made zomim and the other one isn't. Well, since they didn't testify within that short time frame, they're looked as two separate groups. This idea that even 100, if you knocked two, the whole group's out, that's only if the 100 are within together a short time span. But once they're not at the same time span, who says that they have anything to do with each other? In other words, when you this chiddush, that if you find one witness is a false witness, we knock them all out, that's only if they're all coming together. How do you know what they're coming together? Well, they're coming together and testifying within a very short time frame. If they're not testifying within a short time frame, so what do you want? It could be one pair of witnesses, has nothing to do with the other pair of witnesses. So why are you disqualifying these two witnesses? Just because you disqualify two. I got no business with you guys. The only logic to knock out everybody is if they're all together. Then you could say there's something wrong with that group. But if as one has nothing to do with the other, so what constitutes that they're one group? It's when they all testify toch kedei dibur within a short time frame. Now the Gemara is going to want to understand, what does that mean exactly? How do 100 people all testify within one short time frame is the next question.
They say that they quiz one guy, get a story, then they quiz the next guy, get his story. But then you get to the 99 guy and the first and two.
Yes, so that's going to be the question. That's the question. Amar le Rav Acha midiftoi le Ravina. Rav Acha from a place called Difti said to Ravina, Michti, let's take a look. Toch kedei dibur, hey chidami, what is this time frame of toch kedei dibur? How long? So very short. Kedei she'elas talmid le Rav, the time it takes for a student to greet his teacher. Right? How long is that? So look below. It's the time to say these four words. Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori. Greetings upon, peace upon you, my Rebbe, my teacher. Okay, according to some opinion, even the last word is too much. And it's only Shalom Alechem Rebbe. Okay, fine. It's obviously it's only a couple seconds. That's all it is. So that's the time frame. And that's Alecha in many, many cases, you should know. Let's say, for example, you make a bracha, and you make the wrong bracha. You have an apple, and by mistake you made it a dhamma. Let me reverse this, even worse case. You took a potato, and you made an eitz. And right away you realize, you said, borei pri eitz, and right away you realize it's wrong. Then you can just say, borei pri adhamma, finished. But once 3 seconds passed, maybe this is where the basketball gets, you know, the three in the key rule, right? If you stay in the key 3 seconds, it's too long. So that's about 3 seconds. So, but if you waited 3 seconds and then you realize it's too late, now you got to say the whole bracha over and it's all wasted. So the same idea. So if that's the time frame, so now the question is, maya tuvahava. But 100 witnesses are way too many to testify within that brief period of time. So he says like this. Obviously, from the first to the last, it's a long time. Amrele, that's not what he meant. He meant kol chad v'chad B'toch k'dei divar shel chavero. Each and every one has to be within that time frame of the colleague. So from witness 1 to 2, and from 2 to 3, and from 3 to 4. So as long as there's no lapse of this amount of time between the conclusion of one witness's testimony and the start of the next one's, all the testimonies are joined and the witnesses are considered to belonging to one set. So obviously, but in other words, the best, and I mean, usually if two guys are coming in together, then you know they're going to testify together. They talk to one, and then they finish one, and then they call on the guy comes in. So as long as there's that group that keep pouring in, that's fine. But if, you know, they're finished, and now another guy walks in, well, he has no business with that fellow. So that just defines the nature of the group. So again, in practical terms, you know, most likely they'd have to all be coming in together or coming in while one guy's testifying. But when they're all finished, let's say they heard 10 guys, and then 10 minutes later another guy comes in, then he's got no business with that group. Okay. Yeah?
Back then, listens already to two witnesses, or even three for that matter, and they decide, okay, that's what the guy said, they all concurring. Why do they need anybody else after that?
First of all, you don't know what they're going to say. What if the other ones are going to conflict with them?
This could go on forever.
Well, it could in theory, but I doubt it will, because how many people would witness an event? All right, how many people already are witnessing?
There are doctors' games, so thousands of people.
Okay, but, you know, they could say we don't need all the people. If a guy murders somebody, you know, on home court, you know. The player missed the shot, and a fan comes in and takes a gun and shoots him in front of 20,000 people. You don't need to, but generally that's not the case. So, but the fact is, we already know. Let's say there are 100 potential. But what if two witnesses are going to conflict with the other 98? And you don't know. You don't know what they're going to say till they say. Person comes into court. I have something to say about this. They don't say that. Then I have to ask them, what is it? What if one says, I say, I have...
Time-wise with each other, they can hear what they say.
No, they bring them in a separate room.
Oh.
What do we talk? The best and ask them, they say, okay, you're a witness, I'll come into this room and we're going to talk to you privately. And then the other guy, they make sure nobody's talking to anybody. Of course. No collusion. Okay, next case, we have Rabbi Akiva saying... Next part of the Mishnah, we're reviewing that. Rabbi Akiva Meir Lobosh Lishi. The third one's not going to be lenient, but it's coming to be strict, right? So he's saying, and justice, if one of them was found to be a relative or a disqualified witness, their testimony is invalidated, so too with three. If one of them was found to be a relative or a disqualified witness, their testimony is invalidated. Okay, so that's going to be interesting.
Disqualifies the entire group.
Yeah, if they're coming in together, and also if they're watching the testimony. Remember, there's two things: coming in together is one thing.
Yeah.
There's a second thing. You know, where were they when they were witnessing the event, and they had to be witnessing it together as well. Right? So, and that was the discussion. Well, what are you going to do? But he's saying that's the problem. If a relative is watching and he's intending to testify. So, Amalei Rav Papala Abaye. So, one second. Did we miss anything?
Quick one. Do we answer the question of whether two brothers witnessed the event?
It's a machlokes, right? We said it's a machlokes. So, right? So, let's just take it further now. So, Rav Papa says to Abaye, okay. Elamayato. So let's think about it. We have a machlokas here. So if somebody is witnessing the event, according to one of the opinions, that makes him a witness, right? And if he's a relative, it can mess things up. So Gemara asks a question. According to that side of the coin, elamayato, but now, horugyatso. The man who gets killed will be able to save the murderer.
That's my question.
Why? If so, let the presence of the murdered man save the murderer by invalidating the testimony of the others. Since the victim was a witness to his own murder and is qualified to testify about it, even if this were physically possible, he should invalidate the testimony of all the other witnesses and make it impossible to convict the murderer. In other words, the murdered man is disqualified to testify because he is a relative and one of the principals in the case himself. I mean, let's make it simpler. Let's say a guy got hurt. He also couldn't testify. Let's say somebody punches you in the nose. You can't testify. You can just make a claim, but you can't testify. You are not a qualified witness. So now the fact is, earlier we had an opinion in the Mishnah that said, well, if you know, if the guy's there and he's watching, disqualifies them. So according to that, it's a problem. So one second. So Tosafot suggests the victim may also be disqualified as an enemy of the defendant, since he hates the person who kills him. So there's many reasons why the murder victim would be a disqualified witness. Right. Now, Rav Papa's question is obviously not intended to prove that murderers cannot be tried, since the Torah clearly states otherwise. Rather, this argument is that the rule asserted by the Tana of the Mishnah cannot be true, since it would lead to the impossible conclusion that murderers cannot be convicted. And there was an opinion that said even if a relative watches, he can mess them up. Rav Papa's argument is directed to Rav Yossi's view. Rav Yossi's view, who says that a relative can mess up. Unlike Rebbe, Rav Yossi does not require a disqualified witness to participate in the warning to become part of the group. Remember, that was the machlokes. Do you have to have warned them or just observe? Rav Yossi says, no, just observing is enough. He considers anyone who saw the crime part of the group, even if they did not intend to testify. That's his opinion. That's his opinion. So thus, the victim should also be considered one of the witnesses to the crime of the murder, and his presence should disqualify all the others who witnessed the crime. Accordingly, to Rebbe, however, this would not pose a problem, since the victim would not become part of the set unless he warned the murderer. But so we're just trying to show you, according to Rebbe Yossi, your opinion. We're talking about a regular relative's watching and isn't intending and testifying. So based on your logic, then even the murder victim would knock it out. And we know that can't be true, so therefore your whole opinion can't be correct. So clearly the Gemara assumes at this point that it's not necessary for the disqualified witness to actually testify in court in order to invalidate the rest of the testimonies. That is that opinion of Rabbi Yossi. So saying Rabbi Yossi, you know, it's just a ludicrous position. So he says, oh, no, not necessarily, because you could convict a guy, kishahar goyachra, if you killed the guy from the behind. If you kill the murder victim from the behind, so then he won't be able to see that.
Right?
So the sources that speak of executing a murderer must be seeing of just such a case. You begin to see that this is a very dochek position. Yeah. Comes out only if you murder a guy from the back, can you ever execute him? Then the Gemara presses further. Well, okay, how about this? How about Nirva Yatzel? How about a person who was sodomized? The victim was sodomized. What are you going to tell me? He didn't know who was sodomizing him? It's also a capital case? That for sure should wreck it up. So, no, Kishir Nirva Meacha. He sodomized him from the back, and he never knew who sodomized him.
I saw that one. I did it the other way.
You can do that's okay. Forget about it. And, but he never saw him. He didn't see him.
Okay.
I mean, Mark could have said he blindfolded. Yeah. I mean, so Mark says, "Well, wait a minute. What about Horeg for Avila? Yeah, so let's reverse it. What about the murderer himself? The murderer himself is a witness to what happened. He's a disqualified witness."
Right.
You were talking about the victim. What about the murderer?
Right.
The murderer or the sodomizer, and he certainly saw what was going on. So how are you going to answer that question? Their principles. So Ishtik, Abai had no answer. He had no answer to answer these questions. So it would seem that it's a good question on Rabbi Yossi, because now you've shown that people who are just hanging around will mess it up. Anyway, Kiyasa Lakami to Rav, when Rav Papa came before Rava, remember this was... Rav Papa was asking the question to Abaye, and Abaye couldn't give him a good answer. So now Rav Papa came to Rava. He asked Rava the same questions that he asked Abaye. And Amar Lay, Rava gave him an answer to all the questions, to the first question, all the questions. Let's look at what the Pasuk says. Two witnesses, what do they do? Yakum Dovor. By the word of two witnesses, a matter shall be established. What does it mean, established? It means, b'mekayme dover hakosav medaber, the scripture speaking about those who establish the facts and not regarding the participants. So therefore, the whole question was a moot question. He's saying it's ridiculous to say that the participants are part of the game because they can't be witnesses anyway.
Wait a minute.
Wait, just wait. two or three, it doesn't matter. Hence, neither the murderer or his victim, nor the sodomizer or partner can be considered witnesses in this context. They do not invalidate the testimony of others. It's talking about those who establish the facts. And not, it's yakum, you establishing the facts. Okay. A participant can never establish a fact.
Right.
Thus, when we derive from this word that even a large set of witnesses is treated as the same set of two, it says two or three, right? The verse refers only to those who observe the incident and not to those who participate. It's alpi, two or three is mekaime, they establish the facts, not doing it. And by definition, they can't even begin to become witnesses. It's not like a person who could normally be a witness and is disqualified for a reason. A participant, by definition, is not a witness. It's not, you want to tell me the brother watched. Okay, he's a disqualified witness, but because he wants to establish the facts. Participants don't establish facts. So you can't ask me questions from participants. That's the way Rashi is understanding it. According to many other Rishonim, the Gemara now abandons the view that disqualified witnesses become part of the set. According to Rabbi Yossi, merely by seeing. Some opinions say Rabbi Yossi's is just finished. Okay. And once Rabbah makes the point that the verse speaks specifically of those who establish the facts of matter, we also learn from the verse that only those who actually come to court and testify about it are considered witnesses, since only these can be said to establish the matter. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi is completely knocked out. Rabbi too agrees with this. Okay, anyway, that's enough to go further on that. But anyway, we took care of that question. It's a ridiculous question that you could not have asked. Fine. So now we move on. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi said, when do we say this rule? Bamed, Vermemur, and we're talking about capital cases that can knock him out. But in non-monetary cases, what are you going to do? You never can ever can get a ruling on this, because what's going to happen if two brothers were watching what's going on over here, right? Remember? Whether in monetary cases or, so Rebbe says, and Rebbe argues on him, and he says, whether in monetary cases or in capital cases, the disqualification of a single witness invalidates the testimony of the entire group. But when is this so? Here's the point. Only when they, the disqualified witness, warn them. But if they don't warn them, what do you want two brothers to do? Just by seeing something that doesn't mess them up. So remember, Rebbe's the one who says they have to actually warn him. If they're just watching, that doesn't make a difference. Rabbi Yossi was of the opinion that watching was enough. So now the Gemara wants to establish, well, how do you know if they're coming as witnesses or not as witnesses? So how does the Beis Din know this? Because remember, what's going on with the event of the crime is one thing. The Beis Din now has to establish, how do they know who is coming in as a witness? So the Gemara asks, hey, so, heichi amrinan laho. So what does the Beis Din say to them? Again, according to Rebbe, those seeing an event must intend from the very beginning to serve as witnesses in order for the disqualification of one of them to validate the testimony of others. Although Rebbe stated that this intention is determined by their participation, a warning, in other words, he's saying if they warned him, then we could tell that's what he wants. The Gemara nevertheless assumes that there must be other ways to establish this, since warning is relevant only to capital cases. That's the point. What about in a monetary case? Yeah. Let's say capital case, you're right. A guy's going to be Mechal Shabbos. The only way he's going to get killed is if he's warned. And you want to be a witness. So, of course, if you warned him, then we know you warned him. But what about a monetary case? What if witnesses want to say he paid him back? Yeah. So it's just thinking as a warning. So how do you know that these people were coming as witnesses together? How do you know they were witnesses then? They watched the loan. Okay, so they can testify the guy made the loan. How do you know? The 10 guys watched the loan. Is anybody warning anybody?
No.
So how do you know the 10 guys were all intending to be witnesses?
Right.
That's the point. Rebbe is saying that if they intended to be witnesses, then they're considered together as a group. So when it's a capital case, so then they all have to warn him. They have to say, don't kill him. But that can't be the only way to determine that, because the most cases in the world don't require warning.
Right.
So then how are we going to know then? So that's what we're saying. So what do we, the courts, say to the disqualified witness to determine whether they had intended to serve as witnesses when they observed the incident or not? Okay, in other words, how, You know, the case that Rebbe gave for us knowing that is if he warned him, but that will only work in a capital case. So what about monetary cases to which Rebbe's saying the halacha is the same by capital and monetary? So by monetary, how do we know this disqualified guy was witnessing it as a witness, although you don't have to give any warning? So how do we know? So what does the Beis Din ask him? So Amar Rava, Rava says, Hachi Amrinan Lo. They ask him straight up, Lemichsi Atisu? Did you come to the scene of the crime merely to see what was happening? Let's say you heard shouting in the street and you were just one of the rubberneckers, right? You're just wanting to take a look at what's going on. Ola Hasudi Asisu. Or did you come to the scene to testify? Or whatever it would be, but that could be any case, but we want a case where a warning is not necessary. Let's say simple. Reuven punches Shimon, breaks Shimon's leg. Yeah. All right, you're hearing screaming in the street. Yeah. And the guy says, don't. And he does. And you're running, and whoa, what's going on? And you come just as Reuven breaks Shimon's leg.
But if Reuven is lending money to Shimon, there'd be no shouting.
So but it could also be the guy happened to pass by when they were lending the money. Right. The guy was just sticking his nose in. Right. You could, right. But I'm just, not every case a capital case. In this case, the guy's going to want damages. Right. So the other guy says, I never broke his leg. Prove to me I broke his leg. All they said, was anybody there? There's a couple guys there. And I said, when you were you there as a witness or were you there just to see what's going on? Right? You have to be there. What were you coming for? That's the point. That's what we're asking them. Because then we can establish if you're coming to...
say I'm here as a witness before knowing what's going on?
He hears all of them. What?
They were all observers. How could they know right away they're going to be witnesses? I come with the intention to watch this guy break his leg.
Well, if you see, they're fighting the guy saying, I'm really taking a good look to see what's going on, to make sure I could see what's going on. No, he says, I'm coming, I'm looking, because I'm coming to testify based on what I see. When you came, were you just daring her to look? Well, the Beis Din asks it. Remember, the problem's only because we have one false witness over here. So we're trying to know, was he somebody who came as a witness or just somebody who came to watch? You know, the victim could say, oh, these five guys, they saw what happened. But we have to ask him, well, you know, what did you come for? Did you really see? Well, I really wasn't coming to be as a witness. I wasn't paying a lot of attention. I wasn't looking at detail. I didn't really come to take a look at to testify. So like I said, I just came to look. Not it's the difference in looking and being a witness. Being a witness means I'm going to pay attention to the details. There's people who could see. There's people who could see. Right.
So who's going to establish that?
Well, the witness, because remember, the witnesses go under rigorous scrutiny. Yeah. And if you really weren't paying a lot of attention, you really can't say, you know, who's at fault. You have to say, well, I was there and I saw the guy did this. Or, you know, other people, I just saw there was something going on over there. There was fighting. I don't know. I don't know if it was self-defense or it was, I don't know who started. Remember, there could be a defense. Yeah, Reuven broke Shimon's leg because Shimon said he's going to kill him and he had a gun and he's going to shoot him. And he broke his leg. So there's one guy, just, you know, people just looking. I, you know, he's looking to see that did Shimon have a gun and how the gun was loaded and this and that. Some people are looking to mamish look because they know I'm going to have to go to court. I got to really pay attention to the details. Another guy says, you know, it's just interesting. They want to see what's going to happen, if anyone's going to get killed or not. But I don't plan on testifying because I don't really want to pay a lot of attention. That's if you really have testimony to give.
So if you happen to see a commotion in the street... You see a commotion in the street, you go outside your house and you start to watch. So are you committing yourself to your...
No, well, it depends. If you don't plan on watching it carefully, there's no obligation for you to watch something carefully. The obligation is if you clearly have seen something and you have real facts to present, you can't hold it back. But if I'm just a gazer... And I really didn't plan on really looking at it carefully, and I can't really give you conclusive evidence. You're going to say, well, what was the cause of the fight? I don't know. You know, was he self-defensive? So I don't know. You know, because I really wasn't looking so carefully. But if the guy really knows, let's say he really knows, let's say they're going to get Reuven, they're going to say, well, Reuven's guilty, he broke his legs. And another guy saw that Shimon pulled a gun on him. He saw it and he knew it, and there's not a doubt in his mind, and he clearly saw that. And then he doesn't go to court to tell. Then, and it's more that the court says, well, we saw you there. Can't you testify? He said, no, I can't testify. I really wasn't looking so well. But then later he has regrets, and then he comes, and then he has to bring a korban for that. You know, but not everybody's obliged to watch things. Not everybody wants to see these kinds of things, you know. What if you're at the crime scene of a murder? Not everybody wants to see all the details. They want to look away. Whatever. So that's the point he's saying. So when you came, right, that's the way one interpreted. Others explained this to me that we asked the disqualified witnesses where they came to court to testify or merely to observe the court cases. That's a different interpretation altogether. Yeah. First interpretation was when you were at the crime scene. Right. Now he's saying, are you here just to see what's going on in the court? You want to be an observer of the court? You want to testify? Anyway, so it's two different pshatim.
What? You're allowed to be an observer in the court.
You can come. You can see what the guys, what the commotion is, right? Uh-huh. Now, so if they say they came to be able to testify, then they become part of the group, and that knocks off the group. And then if it comes out, if you found one of them to be a close relative or an invalidated witness, then it do some betela, it knocks him out, because that means he was part of the group. If he says, I just came to see what was going on, so the testimony of the others is valid. Because you can't take the other guy in, because we've come back to that famous clause. Because Ma Yasu Shnei Achim Sharo Kecha, what are two brothers going to do if they saw it together? Sharkas never, somebody killed. In other words, there's two brothers, they're going to say, listen, brother, you just don't look so, you're not coming as a witness, I'll be the witness. We can't both be the witnesses.
That's right.
If you're going to be considered part of the group just by seeing, then there's no way out. That's what they said before. So therefore, it means that you come to testify, you were watching to watch to be able to testify. So two brothers would tell each other, listen, we'll decide between the two of us, one of us is going to be coming to testify, the other one's not involved. In conclusion, in order for disqualified witness to invalidate the testimony of all the witnesses, they must become joined to them in some manner. The Mor gives several criteria for this. According to Rebbe, they must intend to testify at the time they witness the event. Rabbi Yosef does not require this. That's the machlokas. According to many Rishonim, they must also come to court and testify, as taught by Rava in his exposition of the verse, Yokum Dovor, a matter shall be established. According to Rashi's understandings of Rava's first statement in our Gemara, they must testify within Toch de Tibor, the time required for an utterance of each other. This, however, is disputed. Many Rishonim maintain that Rav's ruling there does not apply in this law. Fine. We're going to see in a minute that the halacha follows Rebbe. So since the halacha follows Rebbe, disqualified witnesses do not invalidate the testimony of other witnesses unless they both intended to testify when they saw the incident and then came to court to testify. That makes them part of the group, and that would invalidate them. Other Rishonim maintain that the only criteria is that the disqualified witnesses intend to testify. There's a machlokas. The view of Rama is that either intending to testify or testifying together within the time of an utterance causes the disqualified witness to be joined to the other witness, another witness, and valid the testimony as noted above. Okay, so you have different machlokasim in the poskim in this. Should be noted that every facet's Gemara is subject to numerous explanations in the commentaries of Rishonim and Achronim, among the commentaries of Shulchan Aruch, and in the classic Tshuvas. To deal with these would take us far beyond, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of details in the nuances here. And finally, now we just jump the gun, but to end it off, Itmar, we were taught the following, is a machlokas in the Amoroyim, exactly who the Paschal like. Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Shmuel says, Halacha ka Rabbi Yossi, we hold like Rabbi Yossi. So even if they weren't coming to attend to testify, and even only in capital cases, he holds like him in both cases. Rav Nachman Amar Halacha ka Rabbi, and Rav Nachman says the law is like Rabbi, and the Rambam also rules like Rabbi, and that's how we pass it. Because whenever Rav Nachman argues, we go with Rav Nachman. So if he says the law is like Rabbi, that means that. they can. We apply it in monetary cases as well, not just in capital cases. But they have to have known that they were together, and that's the machlokas and the rishonim. How together is together? Just in the sighting or coming to court or both? And that's way too long. Okay, we're going to end it there. Perfect place to end because we're at the bottom of the page, and tomorrow we start a new Mishnah. So that's a good place to stop. Okay.
I'll just take this too.